Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Candidates Forum for Democratic candidates for 6th Judicial District Attorney. This evening's forum is sponsored by the Silver City Daily Press and Independent, Community Access Television of Silver, and Coop 88.1, and the Grant County Administration. So I want to thank you all so much for joining us this evening, and thank both of our candidates for being here tonight. This evening's forum, just for the folks who will see this later, today is the 12th of May, and we're in the middle of early voting now. So after you hear the folks speak, you'll want to make sure to get down to the Grant County Administration Center during regular business hours and cast your ballot. You can also vote on Election Day, which is Tuesday, June the 7th. All right, so before we get started, I'll sort of run through the ground rules and how this works. We'll begin with opening statements, about a 3-minute opening statement from each of the candidates, and then we'll get into questions. And I'll intersperse questions from the audience, written questions with questions from Stu McClendon. Stu covers crime and justice for the Daily Press, and so he'll be asking some questions on behalf of the newspaper. We'll call on him periodically to do that. We will ask, if you need cards, feel free to pick them up there in the back of the room in pins. I will ask if you will try to address your questions to both of the candidates. I see I've already got some questions here that are addressed to specific candidates, and basically what I'll do in that instance is I'll try to rephrase it so that it addresses both candidates, and if I can't do that, then your question probably won't get asked. I may also combine questions that are on similar topics to save time this evening. And that's more or less covers questions. Any questions about the questions? All right, very good. Candidates, 3 minutes opening statement. We'll have a brief 2-minute or so closing statement at the end of the evening. If you feel like you didn't get to address a question fully, or you'd like to have essentially redirect, we don't go back for second rounds. So if there's a point that you'd really like to make or something you'd like to readdress, I'd ask that you do that in your closing statement. I'll ask also that you try to keep your responses to the questions to about 2 minutes each. I'll give you a little wave, and you've got about 30 seconds left. So just kind of keep an eye on me. I'll give you the sign. It'll be good. Any questions for you?
It's asking a lot of lawyers.
there's a reason that I spell these things out up front. All right, then. Without further ado, let's get started. We'll begin with opening statements. Begin with Michael Renteria.
Well, I want to thank the Daily Press for giving me the opportunity to be here and invite me to be here to speak with you all today. In a nutshell, I feel my job is to try and connect with you. That's what I need to do as a candidate. If I can connect with the people that are of this community, of the district, which involves, of course, the three counties that are in our district, if I can do that and connect with people, then I think I'm well on my way to doing things right. So I wanted to start by letting you all know that. Another thing I want you to know about me or about what I feel during this opening statement is I think it's important that a candidate that's running for a position like this, and maybe all positions now that I think about it, that we make your concerns our concerns or my concern. That's another key, I think, to being a good public servant, a public official, is one that's elected, one that's appointed, whatever the case may be. So I want you all to know that from my heart, that's how I'm looking at this, that if I can make your concerns my concerns, then I'm sure that I'll have the best chance to be effective in the role that I'm hoping to play. There are things that come up in life that I think are important and that are like crossroads for people. There are doors we open, and then I believe there's doors that are open for you. I really have to be very sincere with all of you. This opportunity for me is not a door that I opened. It was something that was opened for me. And I'm taking that as a sign internally, personally, that it was my calling to step out and try to make this thing happen, try to be someone that could fill a role like what we're running for and really make a difference in our communities. It's about service. It's not about being an authority. It's not about pride. Those things can get in the way very easy, I can tell you. I'm sure I've been guilty of those things a lot in my past, and I'm trying to learn as I get older to make sure that I'm careful with that, because it has to be about service. And if it's not about that, then it's not the right thing to be pursuing. And I don't think I'd have any business trying to pursue this position if it wasn't anything else but service. So I really feel it's a call. I don't feel it's anything outside of a call. I think it's a calling. I want to make sure that you all feel that it's about community. I know that there's a lot of things we could talk about our experience. I can tell you, I have 17 years experience as an attorney, but I have a lot more years experience working in the community as a social worker. That's my undergraduate degree. I've worked with CYFD. I've been a JPO. I've worked at the schools as a teacher, as a coach of youth and high school level age, 20 plus years. And so I just want you all to know, I think it's about teamwork. I want to stand for teamwork, and I'm hoping that that talks to you, your hearts, and your minds. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael Renteria. We turn now to the incumbent district attorney, Francesca Estevez.
I would rather remain seated if I can. good evening, and I want to...
If you would push the little white button there on the microphone, then everybody can hear you.
Okay. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. I want to thank Silver City Daily Press for, first of all, keeping its paper alive, and secondly, sponsoring these types of forums. So I am the incumbent, Francesca Martinez Estevez. A little bit about me. I began as a legal aid attorney in 1981 in New York. I worked in New Jersey. I was a professor at Seton Hall Law School for the legal services clinic. And so I have always been in service. I like to say I never charged a dime for justice. I've always been an advocate for people, for the downtrodden, for indigents. I have over 30 years experience as an attorney, and the last 21 years I've been a prosecutor in the 6th Judicial District Attorney's Office. And one thing led to the other, and I won the election. I'm proud to say that under my tenure as district attorney, I have attracted new attorneys to the district. I've gotten some young blood in. I have stepped up the prosecution of what we consider most violent crimes. Some of the statistics I'd like to share with you, for example, are in 2012, under my predecessor, Grant County had 975 open cases. 2015, we have 1,190. Hidalgo County had 200 cases. We have 289 this year. Luna County somewhat has gone down. I'm not sure why, but mostly we're prosecuting felonies in Luna County. 631 cases in 2012 and 584 now. One of the things, and I know the court staff that are here will say, is we have been engaged in jury trials. Grant County in 2012 had zero jury trials. In 2015, we had 79 jury trials. Hidalgo County, we had zero jury trials in 2012. In 2014, 28, 2015, 18, and in this year, 10. Likewise, Luna County had 4 jury trials in the year 2012. That was before I became DA. In 2014, we had 104 jury trials in Luna County. 2015, 105, and so far this year, 48. So I'd like to say that under my tenure as district attorney, I've stepped it up, which is what our community needs. And it is about service to the public. However, it is not a political job. It shouldn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican. What a district attorney has to do is work with law enforcement and hold the cases and prosecute those that need to be prosecuted. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Francesca Estevez. She's the candidate and incumbent for 6th Judicial District Attorney. All right. We have got a whole stack of questions here from the audience already, but if you've got something you'd like to ask, feel free to turn them in. I'll do my best to get to all of them, so we better get moving. I can't go wrong with a question like this. May as well just jump right into it. If there's something with the potential to make big news, how would you handle the situation with law enforcement, family, and the press? How do you envision your office in using the media for transparency in the community? This is not on behalf of the paper, but it's a great question. We'll begin with Francesca Estevez.
Well, I think it speaks for itself. Most recently, I have had to be transparent with the community and with law enforcement. However, I do not rely on the press necessarily to push an agenda. So I communicate with the people I need to communicate with, and if it means the media, certainly I would do a press release or speak to the media if there's an issue that needs to be discussed.
All right, that's Francesca Estevez. We'll now address the same question to Michael Renteria.
Do you want me to stay sitting?
It might be easier. I know with the attorney thing, you guys want to stand, but if you stay seated and swing the microphone over your way, it might actually be easier for folks to hear.
Okay, let me try. I'm so used to standing up when you address people, so you bear with me with that, sorry. Well, I think the media can be a tricky thing. I know it's a necessary thing, but I also know that there's certain things that can't be shared with the public at certain stages of a case. You know, you have to protect the integrity of the case, especially if it's an ongoing investigation. There are things that you just aren't at liberty or have the freedom to talk about. But on the flip side of that, you want to make people feel that you're being accountable and that you're letting them in or bringing them into the loop, is what I like to tell officers. Officers like to be brought into the loop. People, I'm sure, are no different in the community. They want to be brought into the loop, and so they know what's going on. So I think dealing with the media, you have to really use your skills as a communicator. I think that's what's important. What I've also learned in my experience is that the most effective communication that I can give anybody, whether it's a client, the public, the court, staff, anyone, is that there has to be relationship with them. And I think if you build relationship with them and you focus on that relationship, then I think it allows for you to become a more effective communicator. So I want to start by saying that. Media, I've had a lot of experience with media in my lifetime as a coach. I think I mentioned earlier in my opening that I coached high school athletics for 20-some seasons in Denver, one sport or another. Well, I was head coach on certain sports. I wasn't always real receptive with the media because I was always worried that the negative would reflect more than the positive. And I learned after making mistakes myself, that I was the one responsible for it coming out negative. It was that I didn't have the relationship with the reporters or the people that were coming to me for the information. I didn't have the relationship that I needed to have with them, so therefore I wasn't able to communicate with them in an effective way. So I really believe the key answer to that question is there has to be a relationship so that the communication that you have with the media, which I know is a necessary thing, is accomplished in a very effective way and in a way that doesn't compromise the office or the work.
Can I go right there? All right, we move to the next question from the audience. What kind of criteria will you use to go to trial or have a plea bargain? What do you envision your relationship with law enforcement being when working with cases? We'll begin with Michael Renteria.
Well, one of the first things I wrote about was trials, and here's what I want to say. I think the justice system, especially from a prosecutor standpoint, it needs to be about truth, not about the number of trials. And I understand why the numbers are shared and why there's value to the numbers, but I just want you all to understand that from my perspective, what I feel is driving me, it has to be about truth. If truth comes out and the officers do a good job of doing what they do to bring the truth to light, and the prosecutor does a good job of screening the case for the elements that are necessary to charge and prosecute the crime, then the truth comes out. The truth always prevails. The truth never changes. I think the truth has a way in itself of working itself out to where the guilty are found guilty and the innocent are found innocent. Now, I'm not going to say that I'm so naive that I know it works 100% of the time. It's not true. We're human. Being human, there's going to be errors sometimes. I just think it's important that we make accountability the benchmark. That's what I think everyone needs to look at. Community wants to know that they're secure, that they're safe, that they've got a prosecutor and a law enforcement agency that is out there serving to provide them with security and safety. That's what I think is the key. So truth, accountability, teamwork. I'm such a big believer in teamwork. I mean, I've led a group of kids for years, and I know how important it is to be the leader, but if you're not a good leader and you don't find a way to serve the ones that you're leading, they won't follow you. They don't want to follow you. So My perspective on that, as far as teamwork, is that this is my viewpoint. The police are as good as the prosecutor. That's my viewpoint. I don't believe it's the other way around. I don't believe that a prosecutor is just as good as the police are, because I think it's the prosecutor's job and duty to educate, to make them more effective, to bring them around to what needs to be presented and put together so that you make a very good case, a case based on truth. That's my perspective on that question.
All right, it's Michael Renteria. Turn now to Francesca Estevez.
Well, I believe that, of course, prosecutors, prosecutors and the police have to work hand in hand. We are one mind. We have different roles. So the police investigate and ferret out the evidence, and prosecutors have to evaluate the evidence and decide if there's enough, whether to prosecute or not. And certainly truth is something we all want. Our system doesn't always allow truth because we have rules of evidence, so sometimes things don't come in which we want to come in. But I think your question was how we evaluate whether we go to trial and whether we have a plea bargain. So I've always been a champion of plea bargains. Plea bargains are a tool that a prosecutor uses to gain a conviction. And it really depends on the case, it depends on the victims, it depends on the evidence, and frankly, it depends on who the judges are, what the jury pool is like. So a plea bargain is not a way out, it's a way in. It's a way to get a conviction and sometimes control the outcome of justice. Trials are a necessary part of the system. Not every trial you're going to ferret out truth, and not every trial will end up with justice. I hate to bring up old sores, but O.J. Simpson case, Casey Anthony case, there's a lot of times where a case will go to trial and justice is not held. And it depends, so it really depends on the system and the rules of evidence and so forth. So I think each case has to be evaluated based on what evidence we have and what the victims or what justice requires.
All right, we'll move on to a question now on behalf of the Daily Press. I'm going to turn now to Stuart McClintock. What have you got for us, Stu?
All right. On that note, there are many in the area that believe that a lot of cases do get thrown out. And my question on that is, how as a prosecutor will you aim to get more of these cases prosecuted? And, I mean, kind of as you had just said, use a plea bargain as a tool to get a conviction, how will you make sure the public feels that there is some kind of justice served? There have been some cases such as the ATM incident where a trio had dragged the ATM through a street all the way to a house, and none of them served any time or were convicted of anything. That's just an example. I'm wondering how you will use your relationship with police to make sure things like that, when people feel that justice wasn't served, how do you think you will help justice get served in the future?
Oh, questions. All right, let's just answer this. You get that one first, I guess.
Well, cases are filed based on the adequate evidence that we have. And if a person wants to know why a case is litigated or why a case is dismissed, they certainly can ask us. I can't speak for that particular case of the cash machine. A jury heard the evidence and decided. That's why I say there's not always justice during a trial. I certainly would hope for another outcome. Part of what we do is work with the police and work with citizens in explaining why we go forward on a certain case and why we don't. We've had many cases where we've had to explain to victims, we don't have the evidence and this is why. It's not a magic wand. It's not simple. So what we continue to do is speak to victims about their case. If citizens have questions, they certainly can come forward, but there are times where we cannot divulge evidence or certain facts to citizens other than the victims. But it's not a simple task just to say, to have a magic wand and say, okay, this happened and we're going to have a trial and win. The prosecutor really has to work with the police and decide what the evidence is and how we can proceed in getting justice. And that's a matter of communication. I agree with you. It's a matter of communication with the community and especially the victims.
Francesca Estevez, we'll address the same question now to Michael Renteria.
Well, I'll do my best to answer it. I don't have a lot of knowledge or information about that. What was it, the ATM?
We have the mic.
ATM case, so I have to be very honest with you. I don't know much about that. But I think the answer comes back to this. You know, I really believe that it's the prosecutor's duty to make sure that there's adequate evidence. I believe that as the screening agent and attorneys that look at those cases, that if there are gaps or there are things that need to be stronger or come to light better or investigated further, then I think it's up to the prosecutor to make sure that they can convey that the adequacy is not there and then be able to talk to the case agent or law enforcement official that's in charge of that to try and remedy that, try and get back in there and try and either see if it exists, see if it shows up by looking at different angles or different ways to kind of investigate it. Maybe even using the investigator that's assigned to the district attorney's office. I don't know how that's being employed now, but I would see that maybe, you know, there are going to be gaps. And I remember in law school being taught by one of my professors, the one that was criminal law professor, that oftentimes our system, what's justice for one is injustice to another. And it all varies on your perspective. For example, if you're the victim or a family of the victim or you know the victim, your perspective is going to be a lot different, let's say, than the family of the accused or friends of the accused or people that were with the accused. I mean, I could go on and on. So that's a very difficult. I think there's a reason why you see the scales of justice the way they are and with the blindfold on the lady holding the scales, because that thing teeters left or right either way on the smallest of things. And so I think transparency is a very key item. But if you don't have that working relationship with law enforcement, then I think it's hard for anyone that's involved in the criminal justice system to do the right thing. Not always being right, but doing the right thing. And that's a very difficult question to answer in all honesty and be straightforward. That's a mixed bag.
Michael Renteria. We'll move to another question from the audience here. And pretty straightforward, but right on along the lines of what we've been talking about. What is your current relationship with law enforcement? We'll begin with Michael Renteria.
Well, I can tell you all that that's the reason I'm running. Just as honest as I can be with you. I was approached by law enforcement. I was approached from more than one county. I can tell you I was approached from all three counties that make up our district. I can tell you also that I received an endorsement from the Silver City Police Union. They put that in my hands tonight. I feel very comfortable sharing with you that my relationship with law enforcement is about as positive as I can hope for. I do know this, as a defense lawyer, for 17 years working criminal justice cases, and keep in mind, folks, as a defense lawyer, you've got to think both sides of the case to be effective. You don't just think defense. You think, okay, how's the prosecutor going to come at me? How are they going to do this? How are they going to do that? So you've got to work both sides to be effective as a defense lawyer. You can't just put your blinders on and say, I'm going to defend this case and here I go. That's not how it works. I think it's really important that police, law enforcement, the prosecutor's office, that relationship has to be one of team and unity like no other. And I really think that the buck has to stop here. It can't be putting law enforcement out there to take the hits or put their vests on, hoping that they don't catch any shrapnel. I think it's most important that the prosecutor take the first hit. I don't like taking hits. I don't like losing. As a matter of fact, people that know me very well. But sometimes you've got to just bite the bullet, swallow, and be man enough to step out in front. If you're the first line of defense, I think that's your job. If you represent that role, I'm sure you're going to look to me to be the first one to answer and be accountable for it. I hope not to make many mistakes. I can't say that I won't make them, but I sure hope not to make them twice, and I sure hope I have enough in me to be able to step in front and tell you all, you know what, that was my fault, my bad. Here's how we're going to fix it.
rather than making law enforcement feel like they got to step out in front of me.
That's Michael Renteria. We'll now address the same questions to Francesca Estes.
Well, thank you. What I'd like to say is that there's always a tension between prosecutors and law enforcement. So the most important thing is the Constitution, and the prosecutor, the Minister of Justice, doesn't take a side, does not take a side pro-law enforcement or against law enforcement. And I know exactly what happened. I, as a district attorney, became involved, and I was aware of irregularities by law enforcement, and under the rules, I'm not sure if Mr. Renteria knows this, but there's a special rule for prosecutors, 16308, which requires prosecutors to be transparent and to advise the defense bar of any irregularities and any mitigating evidence. And so the big pink elephant in this room is the drug task force. Our local drug task force, unfortunately, has run amok. It was discovered by the Haida grantor, not by the prosecutor. And when he came to evaluate the drug task force, he found what now the public knows is a lack of accountability. Certain law enforcement officers, not everyone, but certain law enforcement officers were not playing by the rules, so to speak. They were not taking the evidence from busts, logging it in, making sure that there was a chain of custody. The only way to win a case is if you have evidence with a chain of custody. So certainly when I realized what my duty was, I knew that law enforcement would throw a hissy fit, which they have. And I don't blame them, because I would not want to be on that side either. However, not every law enforcement officer is involved. The majority of law enforcement officers are hardworking men and women who put their life on the line. But it would be remiss of a prosecutor, especially an elected official, to ignore the pink elephant in the room. Just like Harry Brandenburg, who was put in a very, very difficult position in Albuquerque with a lot of law enforcement shootings and irregularities. She had to take the bull by the horn, which may be a political fallout, but she had to tell the truth, and that's what I did.
Francesca Estes, all right. I've got a question along those lines from the audience in dealing with law enforcement. Does the district attorney's office analyze arrest records to assess bias versus even-handedness by law enforcement in relation to such characteristics as race, age, and gender? If not, would you favor such monitoring of police? We'll begin with Francesca Estes.
No, that's not something that I have ever done or our office in the 21 years that I've practiced as a prosecutor. We don't analyze arrest records. We certainly are privy to some of the arrest records when we have a defendant. We enter their name and see if they have a history. But that is something I think that the community can certainly look at and scrutinize. If there is police bias, if police officers are looking at a certain type of person, a certain race of person, a certain class of person, but the prosecutor's office does not regularly scrutinize arrest records. We use them as part of our ability to know who we're dealing with, which defendant, and what their history is.
And you don't see a place for the DA's office in doing that?
I think what it becomes obvious when we look at some of the cases that are filed, there might be a bias, and we certainly can look at that, but scrutinizing each police record, I don't think necessarily would give you the information you need.
Okay, that's Francesca Estes. We'll address the same question after Michael Renteria.
Well, I don't know if all of you know, but I was a prosecutor when I first started as an attorney for about 2.5, almost 3 years. That's where I started. And so I'm intimately familiar, not only from that perspective, but also as a defense lawyer now. You know, these records that come out, they're made part of the disclosure packet that comes to a lawyer on defense. Sometimes, almost all the time, there's what we call a record, an NCIC record. It not only shows convictions, it shows arrests. It shows all of that.
So I think it does play into what happens with the prosecutor's office, because it's shared with defense counsel. It's shared with defendants. I can tell you that profiling is unconstitutional. It's illegal. And I don't know if your question is geared to profiling, which would definitely be an intentional bias. I don't think there's any place for that in law enforcement or a prosecutor's office. But I think it would be disingenuous to not share with you all that those types of records are shared, and they're shared on a daily basis on cases that are prosecuted with a defense lawyer. And I can also tell you that a lot of those NCIC records don't always have a full write-up on everything that happened with that case. For example, there's a lot of times that the disposition or outcome of the case is not entered in that file. And that creates problems, especially for defense lawyers, because, you know, a lot of times I can tell you that prosecutors, with my experience now in the district, they'll use things that are in that record to work a case with you, either to plea bargain it down or get you to waive a hearing or other things of that nature. I've had direct experience with that. I don't think it's proper to analyze them based on race, color, age, gender, the things you were talking about. But I think it's important to analyze the record as a future hopeful prosecutor, that in terms of how to deal with the case, what kind of direction you want to take the case, whether it's something that you have to be more firm with, or whether it's something you can be a little more compassionate and understanding with, based on what's on that record. Like I mentioned to you, not all records that are turned over to us are just conviction records. A lot of it has arrest record information in them. And I think it'd be prudent of any person working the law enforcement side of a case to know what's on there.
Thank you. Michael Andrea, just to follow up a little bit on that. I mean, I think the question sort of dealt with more than specific arrest records for specific cases, more sort of the aggregate data that, you know, Silver City Police Department arrested X number of people this month, you know, and then all the statistics related to that, monitoring those statistics and seeing whether there's obvious bias there. Do you think that that's part of the role of what the district attorney should do?
No, I don't think that's appropriate. I think statistics, now that I have a little clear picture of what you were asking, I think it's important to keep those, because, you know, demographics and numbers and those types of things do factor in. I think it's important for any office to keep track of those kind of numbers. From my perspective, here's why I want to. One of the things that just comes to my head, I'm a believer in treatment and programs. I believe that sometimes that's an appropriate outcome for people. I'm not saying for all people, and I'm certainly not saying for violent offender people, but for certain people, I think it's a very necessary component or program that should be available to us. So I can see statistics are helping in that way, where maybe it would help us kind of steer us in a certain direction and make sure that we're not missing anything when it comes to maybe some kind of helpful rehabilitative or treatment programs that we could tie into as far as a criminal justice system.
All right, that's Michael Renteria. Move on to another question. All the law enforcement relationship questions. One of the candidates mentioned endorsements by police departments. So how do you feel that endorsements from law enforcement affect how you might do the job of district attorney? Do you feel like that's a conflict of interest? We'll begin with Michael Renteria.
Well, since I'm the one that mentioned that I had that endorsement, I can share this with you. I hope that it's perceived as a measure of trust, that it's perceived as a measure of trying to let someone know, you know what, we're on board with that person. We feel like we understand what the agenda and the platform is there. I know unions are a big thing in Grant County. I mean, I understand why, mine, and all kinds of other reasons for it. You know, I can see why a union type mentality exists as strong as it does in Grant County, let's say, in comparison to Luna County or Hidalgo County, because there's different factors at work there. But I sure hope that the public doesn't perceive that it's any type of a negative connotation or marker I have if your local law enforcement is behind someone and trying to convey that message. They have a voice. They're members of our community just like the rest of us are. And I know that sometimes trying to handle issues or concerns that they may have in a department, I'm sure they look for every available avenue to put it out there so that people will know and understand that maybe there's some issues or maybe there's some concerns or things of that nature. I mean, our country's founded on that principle, that you be allowed to, you know, to speak and you be allowed to share information like that. I'm hoping that the majority of people, including the audience tonight, would feel that it's a feather in a cap to have someone like a Silver City Police Union back or endorse me. I sure perceive it that way. And I know that in any entity, I mean, you're gonna have people, I'm sure, that need to be trained better or educated better, or maybe aren't on the path that all of us want, but we gotta start somewhere. And hopefully we have enough good ones that they are good influence and have a big impact on the younger ones, and that everybody gets better as the years go by. I'm sure you'll measure us that way. As time goes by, you're gonna measure how successful and effective we were. I think law enforcement's entitled to the same courtesy.
Michael Ranger, I cut off the snarky second half of the question, which is, does this mean they will be more involved in providing solid evidence? So address the same question now to Francesca Enceves. Is it a conflict to be endorsed by law enforcement?
It might be perceived that way. Certainly, as I said, the elected district attorney cannot take a side. They have to remain aloof in that they work with law enforcement, but they also have to sometimes be at odds with them. And I certainly, over my 21 years, was known as a very tenacious prosecutor. I had a very high conviction rate, especially in crimes of sexual assault and domestic violence. And I used my relationship with officers to train them on each case. We can't do this because of this and that. Prosecutors don't fabricate evidence. It's law enforcement that goes out and has to investigate and has to talk to the witnesses and grab the shards of glass and take the photographs and so forth. So I don't expect to necessarily be given an endorsement. I wasn't in my first term. Frankly, Mr. Gonzalez got the endorsement of law enforcement, and I don't consider that a detriment. A part of our community, that would be considered something to be proud of. But as I said, we have to work with law enforcement, and I do, but I'm not anyone to shirk telling a law enforcement officer what I think needs to be done and how we can do it better. There are, unfortunately, a lot of cases that we have not been able to resolve. Perhaps if we had better trained law enforcement, we could. You'll never know. When you go to a scene, the evidence is there, you deal with it that way.
Francesca Estevez, we'll turn now to Stuart McClintock from the Daily Press for another question from the newspaper. Stuart.
This is actually from my cohort, Benjamin Fisher, who recently covered the murder-suicide here. In the wake of the tragic recent murder-suicide at the hand of an SCPD officer, records revealed that he made a similar threat a month before. As a local law enforcement leader, do you as a candidate for DA believe the department should have done more after that warning to prevent this tragedy? How would you as a DA wish for law enforcement agencies to respond to instances like these?
All right, Francesca, instead of you to be first.
Well, what I have to say is that I knew Mark Gutierrez as a young man and his family. I am not going to second guess what Silver City Police Department did, nor do I know all of the facts. Law enforcement officers, like soldiers, are on the line every day facing death. Unfortunately, our system does not have built into it any type of reprieve. You know, we've discussed this many times. Law enforcement officers should have a mandatory time off. They should have a mandatory ability to seek counseling, but they don't. So, no disrespect to the question, but I certainly am not going to second guess what Chief Reynolds or the department knew or had to do. I don't know if it would have made a difference. What we do know is, statistically, when women or victims of domestic violence choose to leave, that is when homicides take place. I don't know if a restraining order would have made a difference. Like the Dixie Chicks used to sing, Earl walked right through that restraining order. It's still very raw in our community. And I don't really have anything else to say except that I think our chief handled it with great grace. I think our law enforcement brothers and sisters handled it well. And it'll just take time to try to understand what happened, and hopefully as a community we can prevent some of this.
Francesca Estevez will address the same question to Mike Barangaria.
Well, I can share with you all when I heard about it. It made my heart sink, and it made me feel like it could happen in the community where I live, or any other community in our district, and it's surely going to have a big impact on anyone that lives. That's why I say this has to be about people. This has to be about community. It has to be about building bridges, not tearing bridges down. And so I'm hanging my hat on those words and those thoughts so that you all would understand that my role in that type of situation would be to do what I just mentioned to you, trying to build bridges, trying to make sure it's about community, trying to make sure it's about being effective, not so much how many years experience this or that, it's about how effective can we be. And all of us have to have compassion when there's any tragedy like that. That's the first thing that has to rise to the top. You know, being supportive of those families, praying for those families, making sure those families feel that they're a very important part of our community. Death is one of the hardest things for anyone, I think, to experience. I know I've had my fair share of experiencing that in my family. And no matter what happens, it hurts. And it takes people a certain amount of time to heal. No one's the same. I think it's good to have programs. Again, I'll come back to that. Programs, I think, are important, not just for offenders, not just for the accused, not just for the ones that go through our system and maybe get convicted of a drug use crime or something like that nature. It's important for all of us, law enforcement, every one of us in the room. I think it's important that there be programs set up and that there be, you know, what I would call support from every angle you could think of. Whatever would help, because I think law enforcement is underpaid, underappreciated. I can go on. I mean, there's just so many things that you can attach to that label. And I think as a community, we have to look out for those men and women who serve us the way they do, that they not become someone that we just forget about or take for granted, that they've got it all together. All of us have stresses in life. All of us have factors in life that maybe bring us to a point where we make bad decisions or, you know, bad things happen. Any support we can give law enforcement through programs or any type of counseling or whatever it is, I sure want to be a champion and be considered in favor of that if I'm fortunate enough to be elected to fill this position.
Michael Renteria. Thank you, Stu. We'll turn now to questions from the audience. So we've got a number of great ones ahead here. So this one shifts focus just a little bit to the Grant County Detention Center. What is your point of view on the oversight that it is proposed by the local chapter of the ACLU for the Grant County Detention Center? We'll begin with Michael Renteria.
Well, I can be very honest with you. I don't know a lot about that. I'm not in communication much with the jail. I do know Mr. Carrillo. I don't know if he's still in charge of the jail. Last I heard, he was. And I can tell you, I had conversations with him back in the day. He likes to play golf, I play golf, sometimes I get to play with him. And we talked. And he was sharing with me some of the concerns and things that were, you know, that he was facing. And I mean, that center affects our community. I mean, all of, like, again, it goes back to security, feeling secure, feeling that the people that are in charge of maintaining that facility and keeping the people that need to be in there, keeping them in there, and keeping them safe. I think that impacts every branch of law enforcement, every branch of the court system, everybody as a community. It affects us all. I'm not real familiar about the ACLU things. I can share with you that I remember a case back where I was involved in defending certain things that were going on there because there was some activity going on in the Sally Court where there were fights or some type of things going on. I don't know how far back that was, but it was a while back. And I remember the stink and the ruckus that created. And all it does, it breaks down our sense of confidence that we've got those things under control that are going on in that facility, and no one wants to feel that their jail or their jail community it doesn't have things nice and tight and proper, and that everyone's being secure. All of us have a vested interest in making sure that place functions to do the job and the role that it's there to do. So I don't think it's something that the prosecutor's office should turn their back on, but I don't know how much really of a role we have in affecting what goes on in that jail. I just know that I'd like to be supportive of it in any way that I could.
In a general sense, without being familiar with the specific issues at the Grant County Detention Center, are you in favor of essentially civilian or citizen oversight boards for detention centers separate from, in our cases, the county commission that otherwise oversees the detention center?
So kind of like a watchdog type thing, maybe?
That's essentially what's being proposed.
I can tell you, I don't have an issue with that. I mean, personally, I don't. Professionally, I don't think I would either. I know people like to know what's going on, and some people really dedicate a lot of time and energy and effort to know what's going on and to kind of watch it and be the eyes and ears for people. I think that makes a community stronger, especially if it's done in the right way, and that, you know, it's given a chance to be successful, and it serves as eyes and ears for the community. I think that's always a good thing.
Okay, Michael Renteria will address the same question. Do I need to repeat it to
No, I actually met with the ACLU tonight. I am in favor of that. I think transparency is very important. The problem would be that our county might have to have an ordinance passed or some type of legality, because without that, there would be no fight. There would be no. So a lot of states have that, civilian review boards or oversight committees. I don't think Grant County is as problematic as it was many years ago when we had the boxer fights, as Mr. Leslie was referring to, which I prosecuted. I welcome it. I think transparency is very important. I don't see why the jail would mind that. There are some issues. A lot of times we get calls from inmates about their medicines not being given to them, or family visits, and there are issues, mental health issues. The prosecutor has to step in. I very often get involved in moving someone out of the facility who shouldn't be there because of health or medical reasons. So I think it would help our community to have an oversight committee.
So in speaking to candidates for county commission in these forums, I can tell you it hasn't been a very popular idea with the majority of them. So is there a role for the district attorney to, it's not your decision to make, is there a role for you to advocate for a move like that?
I think it really is up to the county fathers. I certainly, if I was asked my position, I would tell them I don't think there's anything to fear. I don't know if there's a cost element, and I am aware that the county fathers did not want to consider it. I don't know if we right now have a need for it other than for transparency.
Good. Thanks, Francesca Estevez. Move on to another question here from the audience. It deals with another story ripped from the headlines. How will you address, this has all the fatal hit and runs. There's one in particular that I'm aware of that have occurred over the last several months. We'll begin with Francesca Estevez.
So the question is, how would we deal with it?
How will you address those incidents?
I'm not sure if I understand the question. I mean, if it's a hit and run, it's an accident. So I'm not sure what the prosecutor's office or district attorney can do. Certainly, when there are fatalities, our office reviews what the police have. We look at the incident reports. We look at the diagrams. If there are witnesses, we consider that and whether it was a crime or it was a mere accident.
All right. Francesca Estevez will address the same question now to Michael Renteria.
Well, I guess I can start by saying I'm a little bit familiar with the incident. The Green Chamber of Commerce meetings, and one of the things that came up was about the speed that's going on in that main road there where all the businesses are and so forth. And I know it was a real big concern for that group of people. I was able to attend their meeting and speak with them for a little while. I know they all want safer streets. I know they want the speed limit to be obeyed in that area of town. My understanding is that the accident or the death occurred somewhere near that area of town. When people die or there's serious injuries like that, you know, the common thing for people want to do is to hold someone accountable. I mean, I think that's a natural thing for us as a community to kind of, you know, lean our weight towards that side of the street that, you know, someone has to be held accountable. I don't know all the particulars about the case, so I really don't want to talk like I do. I do not know that someone passed away. From what I understand and what I learned, that there was maybe a driving record, an extensive driver violation record with the driver. I don't know if that played a factor in or out. Just from a defense lawyer standpoint and a former prosecutor years ago, I would see where that would be reviewed, and that probably would be a factor for me as far as my experience and my perspective. I think a person's history does play a role sometimes, and maybe how you screen a case or how you look at it. It has to, because you want people to feel that the ones that are allowed to drive are obeying the laws and that it's safe. And we all know that vehicles need to yield to pedestrians. And if you're not being mindful of that with the speed limit or with your attention or whatever other factors might be at play, then there's a problem there. It puts people at risk. It puts the security and safety of our community at risk. I would think you'd want a prosecutor's office to really screen and really weigh out every factor that's involved, especially a prior driving record, if it involved a lot of violations. Again, I don't know a lot about the case. I just know pieces. And I certainly don't want to say the wrong thing, but at least I'm giving you an idea of where my heart and my head would fall as far as how I would screen it and what things I would want to consider in making a decision.
Thank you. It's Michael Rentier.
I do have to add, I don't know what case Mr. Rentier is talking about. We've had several hit and runs.
I think it's the most recent one.
And again, this particular question doesn't have this particular question, so we'll leave it at that. All right, I'm going to move on to another question from the audience here. How many cases should the elected district attorney personally handle in each county? Begin with Michael Renteria.
Well, I can share with you this. A lot of words of wisdom that I've received from former prosecutors that I've had the good fortune enough to know or work with. All have reminded me how important it is to carry a caseload, meaning that I handle cases in each county and in each major community like Silver, Bear, Lordsburg, Deming, etc. I pledge to you that's what I would do. I need to keep myself in the game. I need to keep myself fresh. I need to keep myself to where I'm using my head before I use my mouth, which is difficult sometimes. Because I think it's important that the people know and understand that the prosecutor they elected is one that goes to court and that he's in there doing his job and that he's visible, that there's visibility. That not only the community know that, but that the court system itself, the players in the court system know that. I think it goes a long way for people to know that you've got your hands dirty. You're in there doing the work. I pledge to do that. I plan to do that in every county. I plan to make myself as visible as I can so that the good people of all three counties in the district will feel that they've got a worker out there. He's at it and he's trying to make sure that we're safe and secure. He's handling the caseload. He's not just passing it down and trying to be the big cheese or the big boss. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in being a team player. I'm interested in leading by example. I'm interested in getting people to buy into what I believe in and the energy and the integrity I want to bring to the office so that it becomes infectious and that so that they all value the role that I play in that office and that it's not just a bunch of talk, but that I'm walking it out. And I hope that's what you all are looking for, because that's my plan.
All right, Michael Renteria, we'll address the same question.
And that's exactly what I do. I have a caseload in each county. I work with my prosecutors on cases. I meet with them and discuss dispositions, and I think that is what a prosecutor has to do. I don't like to say down and dirty, but certainly a prosecutor and an elected district attorney has to be part of the process and work cases.
Okay, Francesca Estes. We're going to turn now to Stuart McClintock and see if he's got a question on behalf of the new state. Stuart?
Thank you, Nick. I want to get back to the drug task force again and the recent happenings with that. And my question is, How do you think the drug task force situation could have been handled better, and how do you hold them accountable from here on out?
We do my addressing that question to Francesca instead of us.
Well, certainly the commander who was employed by the drug task force should have, or has to, if there is a new commander in place, review the cases with the task force and look at what's going on. The board members, who are comprised of certain law enforcement officers, including the district attorney, have to have reports from the commander. When I took office in 2012, I was hit with all of the lawsuits, many of which were generated from this same task force. The colonoscopy case is the most, famous case. And what I tried to do with this task force is get a new MOU, which we did, a memorandum of understanding between the law enforcement agencies, and work with the officers. However, it's not the district attorney's job to supervise what each law enforcement officer does. That is left to the police, chief of police or the commander of the task force. Certainly, the most egregious fact of this tragedy is that anyone with eyeballs would have seen the state of affairs of the evidence room, and certainly all of the officers had access to it, but nary a one brought it to the attention of the task force. It was discovered by happenstance. So right now, we're going through a transition where we're looking for a new commander, and the feds have actually decided not to fund the task force at the same level. Unfortunately, our task force did not produce a lot of cases on their own, which was part of the problem. But again, it has to do with oversight by the police commanders.
Francesca Estevez will ask the same question of Michael Renteria.
Well, I want to start by sharing with you all when I was prosecuting back in the early 2000s, I was the drug prosecutor. That was my job. So I had intimate knowledge and involvement in the task force back then, about 14 years ago. And I can tell you that there were only two keys to an evidence vault, one to the main custodian and then one alternate, and in case the main custodian was gone. And those keys didn't get pulled out of a pocket and flipped to anybody and say, go ahead, go get what you want, or go. That's not how it worked. There had to be someone that accompanied them, one of the custodians, in and out of the vault, sign things in, sign things out. Now, I don't know the structure of it now, but here's what I want to share with you all, having had intimate experience working with the task force back in those years. I think it's important to have a main custodian. I think it's important to have one alternate, and that's it. I think it's important not to be able to flip the keys to anyone or anybody that needs to get in and out of there without someone, one of the custodians, walking in and out. I used to be the one put in charge by the district judges to go take the drugs and burn them in Alamo Gordo when it was time to destroy them. So there's a lot of levels of confidence and a lot of levels of professionalism that have to be done there. Right now, I think things are fractured, broken. And my handle on it is this. As a prosecutor, first case out of that vault, I want to know what's going on in that vault. First problem I see out of that vault, I need to take care of it the first minute I get knowledge of it, and not wait and let it ride and let things, convictions and cases and trials and things go on. It needs to be taken care of from the get-go. The first case that comes out of that vault, I used to go to the vault all the time as a prosecutor. I would expect you'd want me to do that still if I were the elected official. It's important to know what's coming in and out of that place so that there's integrity with the cases, there's integrity with the evidence, and that you don't have to use anybody as a scapegoat. Any case we prosecute, we as the lawyers, as the attorneys in the case, we should know what's in that vault. We should know whether it's tainted, whether it's intact, whether something's missing, whether something's been damaged. You need to know from the first case, not the 10th case. And that's my position.
Great. Michael, right for you.
Do you have a follow-up?
I do have a follow-up.
So, with that being answered, how do you think the reputation of the drug task force recovers from here?
Michael Ventury?
I think again, it's gonna have to be about unifying people, making sure that there's communication and relationship with people. I've had voters out when I've been shaking hands and meeting people and letting them share their concerns with me. I've had some voters tell me, you dismantle the task force and I'll vote for you and I'll get 10 of my family members to vote. I've had that. They've told that to me. And all you need to tell me is that you're going to dismantle it. And in all sincerity, I couldn't say whether I would or wouldn't because I don't know enough detail yet. I shared with them my experience from back when I was a drug prosecutor back in the early 2000s. I shared that. And so I don't think it's a real cut and dry answer to such a question, because there's a role that they play as far as drug interdiction and doing things that they do with drug. We have a bad drug problem in these three counties. I can tell you that for a fact, because I do abuse and neglect cases. I represent mothers in those cases, and there's so much meth. Heroin's coming back. There's a lot of marijuana being used and alcohol. There's a lot of stuff going on there. And so I think their reputation maybe has taken a hit because it's been out there in the media so strong. I think that's what's going on. And people have a right to know stuff, and I understand that. But I also think it's important not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't know how a better way to say it. You've got to make sure that you're weighing every factor. People make mistakes. I mean, that's what happens with people. I think what's important to own up to them, get out in front, fix them, don't repeat them. Make sure they don't happen again. Make sure everything has structure and integrity. And I want to be a player in that more than, like I mentioned earlier, I want to build bridges. I don't want to break them down.
All right, Michael Renteria. Or just the same follow-up question to Francesca Estevez.
Well, it certainly is a matter of trust. What Mr. Renteria is not telling you is this drug task force has had a history. It's been disbanded twice, and it is not up to the district attorney. It's funded by the feds, under the high intensity drug trafficking area monies. They decide whether to fund a task force or to fund a prosecutor's office. So it's not up to the district attorney to disband it or not. As I said, this drug task force, Region 7, has been disbanded twice before. In fact, one of the agents was prosecuted by the feds as a rogue cop, as a criminal. So we certainly have had a history in this district of difficulties in drug interdiction. How do we go forward? We have to have a strong commander, and we have to vet the officers who are going to be part of the drug task force. Every officer is trained on how to receive evidence, how to log evidence in. There is no excuse for what has happened, absolutely none. And that's one of the reasons I, as a prosecutor and an elected official, had to edify the defense bar and the public as well. So we're hoping that we can go forward. As I said, the feds have looked at this task force with a wry eye. Some of the funding has been reduced, but we hope that we can rebuild with better staff.
So you think that there is a path forward, though? You're not saying that you think it's going to be disbanded again or that it should?
Time will tell. Time will tell. Certainly, what was discovered necessitated action by the grantors, and they took swift action by memorializing what they found, and the task force board had to take action, and things stopped immediately until they were able to evaluate and they went through the evidence room and reportedly found evidence, matched it to cases and so forth. I'm not sure. Well, time will tell. We're hoping that we can get a strong commander and excellent law enforcement to be part of this task force. The drug interdiction is the area where law enforcement can either make or break. It's a huge area rife with temptation. I think our country has seen that over and over again, where we have officers that fall over the fence and become ordinary criminals. But I'm confident that we can go forward.
Okay. Francesca Estevez. We had a great audience question here that makes a great follow-up to that. Obviously, the district attorney is charged with, you know, prosecuting the laws as they are. But in the last legislative session, there was a proposal put forward to legalize marijuana in the state of New Mexico, which has been done in a neighboring state. Would you have a position on such a move by the state legislature? Francesca Estevez, so you get to take that one first.
Well, I'm certainly in the minority. I have very mixed feelings that a society would have to decide whether to legalize substances as part of the society. Of course, marijuana can be used medically, and our state has a statute which allows medical marijuana. My concern is how it affects people. Any substance will affect your judgment. In those states where they have legalized or decriminalized marijuana, there is a growing body of evidence that we have more traffic problems, that there are more mental health issues, and those states were not ready for that. I think it's inevitable. I think society is shouting that they want marijuana decriminalized or legalized. So, of course, I would support whatever the legislators decide. But on a personal level, I fear for our young people. I fear for people in our society that have to take substances. And I think it affects judgment, and it worries me.
All right, Francesca Estevez will address the same question to Michael Renteria.
Well, I guess the best way I can answer that, if it's legal, then that's the law, and we have to enforce that and allow that, not go contrary to it. So that would be my job if it was legal. I think it's a dual-edged sword. I agree with Mrs. Estevez. There's good and bad involved. If it's for medical reasons, I can see the benefit. If it's for recreational reasons or other type of reasons like that, it could bring in a lot of problems. I don't think it's something that I would do or want my family to do, let me put it that way. But if it's the law, then it's the law, and we have to abide by the law, and we're supposed to help enforce that. So I don't think it's right for me to say what other people should do or not do. I just know that it better be legal, because if it's not legal, then you're breaking the law, and then sometimes there's going to be consequences for that. And any prosecutor, that's part of their oath and office, then help enforce the laws, prosecute and enforce the laws. That's the best answer I can give, and the most honest one.
So you certainly wouldn't be signing on to a petition to the legislature to change that law or legalize marijuana?
If I were approached and asked, sign this, we want to get it passed, I wouldn't sign.
Okay. Michael Renteria. Move to another question from the audience here. Do you have a plan to address the problem of understaffing of attorneys in the district attorney's office? We came with Michael Renteria.
I didn't know that it was understaffed. That's news to me. Well, I can tell you that there's a lot of work in every office. I can speak from my own perspective with the cases that I'm involved with. And so I know that having enough help and enough qualified and people to be prosecutors, that's a big thing for any head official that's in charge of that office. I certainly would hate to step into an office that's shorthanded. That could impact in a lot of ways. Just like, for example, and I know it's a little off the subject, but it kind of runs together, just like saying, I'll never plea bargain. I mean, you bottleneck the system so much that you're not really helping anybody, and I'm sure judges would have a big to say in that. So it's very hard just to take a black or white position. It's always safer, it seems, to go gray, but I would want to have as many prosecutors as our budget would allow us to have. I think that's the best way to go, and I truly want to have a hand in making sure that they're team players, and that I can have some type of influence, not authority, but influence over them, so that I can maybe try and shape and mold and kind of steer the ship in the direction that I would hope it and wanted to go. Being shorthanded is never a good thing. Like I said, I didn't know that was the case right now. It sounds to me like maybe there needs to be some fighting for some more money. I'm sure everyone that has some issue or some interest would say the same thing about that. My interest would be as the head prosecutor, as the elected official, to make sure that I had a team, that it was a full team, and that I wasn't playing a game, a man or two short, and expecting to do a good job. That would be very difficult.
Michael Renteria, turn to Francesca Estevez.
Well, we are close to capacity, I'm happy to say. We have two unfunded positions. I have spent 4 years in trying to get prosecutors attracted to this area. And as we all know, the six judicial districts, Deming, Lawrenceburg, and Grant County, have certain deficiencies. I've gone to the law school. I still advertise on law crossings. And I'm happy to say that I have brought in prosecutors. I hired a new prosecutor who's coming down and starting in July for Luna County. So it's news to me that we're understaffed. As I said, we have two unfunded positions that I couldn't fill unless I get the bean counters to give us that money. So I'm proud to say we have a good staff. We have 10 going on 11 prosecutors, and as Mr. Enteria says, we have plenty of work.
So do you need those two positions? And if you do, how are you going about advocating to get them funded?
Well, for the past 21 years, we've advocated to get those positions funded. And the legislature has not seen fit to fund them. That's all I can say. You know, the positions that I have monies for, I'm close to capacity. And I've spent a lot of time trying to spend the state funds and raising salaries for support staff. I'm proud to say that I've spent more time in making sure my support staff has a livable wage, secretaries, victim advocates. And I think the legislature heard that, because a loaf of bread costs the same for a prosecutor as it does for a secretary. But we don't necessarily control the strength. It's controlled by legislature and politics.
Another question here from the audience. How will you address the lack of jury trials conducted by the district attorney's office in the last 4 years, assuming that you agree that there has been a lack of jury trials? We begin with Francesca Estevez.
Well, as I started out by saying, 2012, Grant Hidalgo Luna had, Grant and Hidalgo had zero jury trials, Luna four. 2013, we had 26 in Grant, 11 in Hidalgo, 39 in Luna. 2014, we had 59 in Grant, 28 in Hidalgo, 104 in Luna County. 2015, we had 79 in Grant County, 18 in Hidalgo County, 105 in Luna County. And just in the 5 months that we have in this year, we had 27 in Grant County, 10 in Hidalgo County, and 48 in Luna County. So that is misinformation, as Ollie North would say. If anybody remembers
We'll turn now, that's Francesca Estevez. We'll turn now and address the question to Michael Renteria.
You know, if I were in that position, I mean, I can see why numbers might make a real impact on people when they hear the numbers. I'd be more concerned about how many of them ended up in a conviction, how many of them ended up where the state was successful, how many of them were acquittals. It's one thing to have numbers, but if there's nothing behind the numbers, then how effective is it being? I can tell you that I know, just being a member of the defense bar in Deming, I think 12 of the last jury trials in Deming have been acquittals. I know that from first-hand knowledge because I'm a member of that community, and I'm able to ask the people that are there what happened, what's the result. So numbers can be misleading. You know how statistics, the old saying goes, pretty much can say what you want them to say. I think it's important that if the numbers correlate to something that of substance or meaning, then there's something that needed to be paid attention to. But if my goal as an elected official in this office were to impress you with the number of jury trials, and that's it, man, I don't think I'd be serving you very well. I think it'd be more important for you to know that our dollars, because it costs to have a jury trial. There's expenses involved with that. There's court time, there's judges' time, there's jurors that are missing work. There's all kinds of other factors. I think it needs to be a good case. I keep coming back to truth versus trials. You'd be surprised at how many times truth will end up either diverting the case off the trial path, or if it won't, then those trials end up coming out the way a prosecutor's hoping they'll come out, where the jury finds someone guilty of something. I think that's another number that needs to be shared, not just the number that have been had or that have been performed or whatever term you want to give that. I think there has to be more substance. I would hope you'd expect that from someone in this office. And I think it'd only be fair to make sure that you guys knew all of those numbers, not just the numbers that we're taking into the battlefield. How many are we winning? How many are really worth the time? How many are really worth the taxpayers' money? Should the case have been played out? Was it a bad case? If it's a bad case, maybe it should have never hit the jury trial floor. There's so many other factors, and I think you should be entitled to know all of those numbers.
That's Michael Rangerian. Thank you very much. And down to my last audience question. That's not specific to a candidate.
Don't I get to answer that question?
You're the first one.
I just want to say that the information.
I know. We're almost to closing statements. You'll get your chance. We'll ask this question from the audience, and the question is, how will you increase support for the LGBTQ community? Michael Renteria.
Well, I think I mentioned earlier in one of my answers, it's not for me to say how people choose to live, or their personal lives are their personal lives. We're a community, and so we need to be about loving one another and being there for one another and supporting one another. And every member is just as important as every other member. And so it's really important, and I really want to convey that. I want to bring community atmosphere to what this office entails. I don't want to be about convictions or how many numbers. Those things will work themselves out. Trust me. The truth and all the other work that gets done that goes into convicting someone, it works itself out. I don't need to be hung up on that. I need to be hung up on trying to build community that is about people, that if I keep my eye on the prize, which is that, I don't think I can help but do a really good and effective job. So that's why I talk about the numbers. I mean, numbers can mean a lot of things. I just think it's important that we let people live the way they want to live, and that we safeguard them from any type of abuse or violence or prejudice, whatever term you want to apply to that sentence of mine. That's not right for us to judge other people or to be. Let people live the way they need to live. Like I mentioned before, we need to care about one another. We need to be there for one another. We need to be supportive of one another. We're all in this game together, and we're all in the same communities together. And so what affects one family or one member affects us all. I truly believe that. And so I'm hoping that what I have to offer and hopefully instill is going to be something that's community-based, plus being a community, being a family, being people. And that all those other things, they work themselves out. As long as everybody's doing the job right and truth is coming out, those things, they sort themselves out. I firmly believe that.
Michael Renteria, Francesca Estevez.
Thank you. Well, the district attorney's office can help the community by making sure that everyone is safe and everyone is respected. And if there are crimes against a person based on bias or gender, that they are zealously prosecuted. And we do that. I think the most important thing is justice in this community, and justice is determined by each case and each set of facts and patterns. I'm proud to say that my office, in the 21 years that I've been prosecuting, has been very, very zealous in making sure that any person who was attacked for a specific characteristic, that crime is prosecuted zealously. And we continue to do that. Communication is very important, and community trust is very important. And I'm proud to say I hang my shingle on that.
Francesca Estevez. We'll turn now to Stuart McClintock for question one. Final question on behalf of the paper.
I think I can do one more.
Now you could.
So you both have talked about transparency a lot and how to be transparent. I guess, how will you work towards that goal of being more transparent? You keep saying transparency is important, but I want to know how you will accomplish being transparent.
All right, we'll begin with Francesca Estevez.
Well, I don't think I have to work towards it because our office is transparent. When people want to know what cases we're prosecuting and why, we meet with them, we tell them. I certainly don't send out press releases on every single thing that happens. If there are important cases and the press calls, I make a statement or release facts. So our office has always maintained transparency. We are governed by the Inspection of Public Record Act, and we have a custodian. If people want to know about a case or about a disposition, we have a certain number of days in which to respond, and we do.
All right, that's Francesca Estevez. We'll turn now to Michael Renteria. Transparency.
Transparency, that's such a big word, and it's an important word. It's really easy to throw out there. Sincerity is the key. I hope people can read sincerity. I sure rely on that. Anytime I meet a new client, anytime I'm dealing with people in the courtroom, anytime I'm dealing with people in the public, anytime I'm dealing with my family, friends, I mean, you have to pick up on the sincerity, because I think that's the more important word than transparency. I think sincerity has more meaning to it, more substance to it, because I think it correlates to a certain amount of accountability. And that's what people want. They want to know that their public officials are being accountable. To me, when I hear the word transparency, I automatically think about accountability. I automatically think about being sincere with the people that you deal with. I automatically think of being real and being yourself in front of people. And I also think about the only way you can be transparent is if you're visible. You gotta be out there. People have to know that you're engaging with them and their community, their groups, their, you know, what have you. Those, I think, are just as important words, if not more important words, than transparency. Because I think if you find those other words that I'm using in play, the transparency is going to take care of itself. And I know there's some things that prosecutors can't talk about at certain stages. I know we talked about that earlier. I talked about that. I certainly don't want to violate that or mess up a case just because I'm trying to be so overly transparent that I put something in jeopardy. That's why I think the other words that I correlate with that word are more important. Sincerity, accountability, visibility, those kind of things, I think, help take care of any concerns or any type of attention that lack of transparency or the view of the general public, how that comes into play. I have to be real. I'm trying to be real. I don't know any other way to be, and I'm hoping that's good enough.
All right, Michael Renteria. All right, we're going to have to change up the usual last question that happens at a forum at the Daily Press. This is a little different office. It's called the time machine question. Ordinarily, I say you're back here, you're running for re-election. What's your one big accomplishment? But you don't get to run for re-election if you win again, right? Is there a term limit?
No, there are no term limits.
There are no term limits. So I can ask the question in a normal way. There you go. Educating the publisher time. All right, then. We'll ask the time machine question. You're back here in the future. You're running for re-election. You just served a term as district attorney. And I ask you, what is your one single proudest accomplishment in office as district attorney, and why? We'll begin with Michael Renteria.
Well, I'm hoping and praying that if we're going to look in the future like that the good people of our three counties will feel that I've left things better than when I started to pick the ball up the first year, and that people are feeling the same sense of progress, accomplishment, and that we're headed in the right direction. So I'm hoping that the look back will definitely be clear to people that things are so much better on the right track than what they were. And if it's running again for the same office, then I'm hoping that whatever work and energy and effort and things that I put into place over my term speak for themselves. I'm really hoping that I won't have to do a lot of convincing or a lot of, you know, trying to sway people in one way or another, that the work will speak for itself, that you all will feel and have seen it, and that things are better off than when I first started the first year.
I don't know that I caught the one specific thing.
The one specific
thing? You're going to have to do better. One specific thing to accomplish.
That there's a sense of unity in the criminal justice system that I represent that didn't maybe exist before I took office. How's that?
There you go. Michael Renteria. We'll turn and address the same question to Francesca Estevez. Since you do get to run again, you're back here running for re-election again. What is the one single proudest accomplishment of your future self?
The proudest accomplishment that I am sure that I continue to do is community involvement. I am a member of El Refugio. I was a founding member of the Healing House. I'm part of the Multidisciplinary Task Force. I'm a member of Legal Aid. I'm a member of the Health Council. And so I live in this community. I want to be here. I want to make sure it's safe. That's my proudest accomplishment, to be community-minded and dedicated to the safety of the citizens of the 6th Judicial District.
So community-minded to you. All right. I'll let you get away with that one.
Yeah, and me.
It was specific.
I'm cute.
All right, which brings us to the conclusion of this evening's candidates forum. Before we wrap things up, time for closing statements, as promised. And we'll do these in reverse order of opening statements. So that means, Francesca Estevez, you get to go first.
Thank you. Well, I want to thank everybody who was here and listened. I urge you all to consider why I'm running again. I'm running again because I believe in this community and I have made a difference. As Mr. Renteria pointed out, he was asked to run because of a situation that happened creating a discourse between the district attorney's office and the police and law enforcement. And I think that's a very important point. What I have to do as an elected official is make sure that my office steps it up, prosecutes, and numbers do make a difference. The fact that we have had more jury trials, and we don't control the result of jury trials. So it doesn't matter necessarily the result. What we have to do as a prosecutor's office is make sure that justice is sought after. We don't control what a judge decides or what a jury decides. And as I said, I've mentioned some of the difficult cases that our nation has looked at in angst because juries perhaps got it wrong. Another case that comes to mind is the Zimmerman case in Florida. So what the district attorney has to do is make sure that the police are trained, that they are honest, that prosecutors take a case, work a case as much as they can, and give it to the jury or the finder of fact to decide what justice is. We do not control all of the outcomes, but we certainly can make sure that we do the best job we can.
All right, Francesca Estevez there. She's the incumbent and candidate for re-election, 6th Judicial District Attorney. We turn now to her opponent, Michael Renteria.
Well, I sure hope and pray that if I'm fortunate enough to be leading that office, that every county that's in my district feels like I'm treating them as my number one child, or my number one priority, because you have to spread yourself to all three. Silver City's headquarters, and here's where it's gonna stay. But you know, there's two other counties besides Grant County, and so I'm hoping that I'm gonna make everybody feel like they're my number one child or my number one priority. I want to share with you that the best way I know to be an effective attorney, and I'll talk from a defense standpoint right now, is that I need to buy into a case. I can't just, you know, meet with them, try and give them a sales pitch, hope they hire me, hope they give me the money, and then go forward. Now, the most effective way that I've learned to be good at what I do is to buy into the case. And and make the client feel that I'm buying into the case. It's the same for this position. It's something that you've got to buy into. You've got to go all out. You can't hold back. You're either all in or you're not all in. You're out. I'm hoping that the diversity of my background, not only the 17 years of being an attorney, but the 5 years of being a juvenile probation officer, working with juveniles, knowing what that system involves, the 3 years as a child protection worker, going into homes and investigating abuse and neglect and making decisions and working those cases myself with my hands, I'm hoping that the 12 plus years as being involved in abuse and neglect cases where I represent mothers, work with guardian ad litem and other lawyers that are in the case, I'm hoping the diversity of my experience with the youth in the high school that I taught at and coached at, I'm hoping that wide angle lens of diversity helps me have the opportunity that I'm hoping to have with the people of our 6th Judicial District. The last thing I want to say, you know, police have to be police. Part of the job of this office is to police the police, because that's something you should count on. I think it's more important to be effective rather than I've been to mechanics who have been 20 some years on the job and ones that have been 5 years, and the 5 year ones are better sometimes than the 25 year mechanics. I've had that experience. So I think there's so many things that play into that. I thank you for the opportunity to meet you all, to share with you all, to let you inside what's in my head and heart. And I'm hoping that you feel much more informed and educated on who's running for this position. Thank you.
Michael Renteria, he is the challenger for the district attorney in the 6th Judicial District. In the primary election is coming up on June the 7th. Early voting is underway now at the county administrative buildings in all three counties that serve, although I think mostly our broadcast tonight will only reach the folks in Grant County. So something to think about in this election is that there is not a Republican candidate for district attorney this time around. So barring the entry of an independent candidate to the race, one of these people will be the next district attorney for the 6th Judicial District. So pretty important primary election there. I want to encourage folks to make sure that they vote. Polls are open from 7 to 7 on Election Day. That's June the 7th. And I had several questions that the audience asked tonight that addressed specific questions that have been in specific cases that have been before the district attorney's office. I didn't ask those questions because they would have only applied to the incumbent district attorney, and it felt like that was something that sort of puts the challenger at a disadvantage in trying to answer those questions. But I encourage you, if you have specific questions for the individual candidates, please do approach them and ask them about those. I want to thank both of the candidates for being here tonight. Thank the audience for being here and asking such great questions. I think you all deserve a round of applause. On behalf of the Silver City Daily Press and Independent, I'm publisher Nick Seidel. Thank you all so much.